CliffCentral.com. It's time for the Burning Platform, which is brought to you every week by Nando's. Today, is it going to be a lemon herb? Mild, hot, or extra hot? Justice Malala, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, guys.
Oh, so much to talk about. Where do we begin?
So little time. I'm so fascinated by Lynn Brown.
Yeah. Did you watch it live?
I watched it last night. I was, what's that word that people love so much? Gobsmacked. I was gobsmacked by her evasiveness, her dissembling. It's quite extraordinary that she is still, I say this and I sound like a scratch record, but that she is still a minister, that someone who is placed again and again and again at the heart and center of state capture. So if you look at this inquiry, the parliamentary inquiry, you'll remember, I think 2 weeks ago, we spoke about the Eskom board spokesperson, Kulani Qoma, who walked in and said, this is what happened. The former chairman, Zola Tsotsi, told me that he received a call from her saying the Guptas have said, don't suspend Matsela Koko, and boom, it happened. So that's the first witness. Then you have Suzanne Daniels appearing before the committee last week saying, oh, I was taken by Salim Essa to a meeting, and from that meeting we were taken to an apartment in Melrose Arch where, lo and behold, there's a Gupta brother, there's the deputy minister and someone else. Boom, again, Department of Ministry of Public Enterprises put at the center. Yesterday you had the former chairman of the board of Eskom, Zola Tsotsi. He appears. Now, you will like this because given the role of Grace Mugabe in the shenanigans in Zimbabwe, one needs to ask what's going on here. He tells Parliament that he gets asked to come to a meeting by, lo and behold, the chairperson of the board of SAA.
Dudumieni. Involved in Eskom.
Yes, he's told, come to the president's house in KZN. I suspect this is the King's Road house. Come to the house. He arrives, and there she is. She proceeds to tell him about some of the problems at Eskom. With her is her son, Talent. Talent is sitting there, and someone else is there, and Salim Essa is there, and they talk about Eskom. This is the chairman of Eskom. What's she doing there? So he's sitting there thinking, am I dreaming? Is this a nightmare? Is this a fantasy? What's going on? Boom. President Zuma steps out of a bedroom and comes in and says, yes, I hear what you guys are talking about. Yeah, what's going on with the CEO of
Eskom? It's like he feigns ignorance.
Yeah, you know, I see. Now, think about, is Zola Tsotsi taking like some strong stuff? Is he hallucinating? No, if you think about that scene, it sounds exactly like the scene described by Fakey Mentor when she was flown from Cape Town to the Gupta home in Johannesburg in Saxonwold, and she was offered a job as Minister of Public Enterprises because you're so nice and we'd like to work with you. She's sitting there saying, Atul, I don't want to be here. And lo and behold, President Jacob Zuma steps out of a room and says, Ntombazana, well, have you made your decision? Well, too bad you haven't made the right decision. Okay, someone show her out. Again and again, President Zuma is in the next room, and then
it's coordinated.
It's coordinated.
This is something they've done over and over again. It's like when you hear Harvey Weinstein had a way of molesting women.
Exactly. Come to my room. Yeah, let's talk about this.
He'd come out in the bathrobe. Oh, you know, God. This is the same modus operandi in a political sense.
Absolutely the same modus operandi.
Wow.
Zola Tsotsi also told us that he was asked to come to a meeting at Lynn Brown's house. Lynn Brown is the Minister of Public Enterprises, or not.
These people could, I mean, they have offices in Cape Town and in Joburg, and often in Pretoria as well. So they've got, why are they all meeting at people's houses?
Well, you know, you know, the official start to see, oh, what's Ben doing walking into Justice's office? And Sia says, I see.
You want a bit of privacy when you're meeting, you know?
Exactly, exactly, you know?
All right.
So Zola Tsotsi gets invited to her house. She proceeds to talk to him about what's happening at Eskom and so forth. And he says, look, these are the people that we would like to appoint as executives and so forth and so forth. Much later, he gets... Now, this is he'd been given a list by Salim Essa saying, these are the people you must appoint, Baba. He goes to the minister and says, no, actually, gives a different list, says, I want to appoint these people. Now, this is the chair, and these are the people we should appoint. She says, okay, I'll look at your list. She looks at his list and says, I'll look at your list. Later on, he gets a list, and it's the same list that came from Salim Essa. And she says, no, this is the list you should of people you should be appointing.
Wow.
So, again, you see the connection of the dots. Now, if you watched last night, Pravin Gordhan, the former finance minister, says to Lynn Brown, let me just give you a little summary. He names five people, a relative, a cousin, a close associate, a former employee, all of them either a former employee of Sahara Computers, which is owned by the Guptas, a relative of Salim Essa, Salim Essa's closeness and business dealings with the Guptas. He goes through all these things and says, what is going on here that all these five people were at Eskom and all of them are linked to the Guptas through Salim Essa? And she doesn't say, yeah, I am angry. This is outrageous. Clearly there's something going on here. She says, yeah, that one is gone. Or Mr. Paminski, who's the guy who used to go to Eskom, say, oh, we need 5 billion rents worth of walla, 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 walla. Then get in his car, go to Trillion and say, this is how you write the tender document and then send it on. Basically, running with the hares, hunting with the hounds. I mean, it's shocking. And this was Salim Essa's guy in Eskom. So, the rot...
And Lynn, she's like, she's also pretending she's not sure how this happened and she doesn't remember this. I mean, she was being grilled.
Yeah. But this is someone who says, I don't know. I don't remember. I wasn't there. It was someone else's time. There is nowhere where she says, you know what? My PA was in Dubai at the same time as the Guptas, Duduzani Zuma, the sales commissioner, and all these Gupta lekis, all in the same place. She doesn't say, my partner, my lover, is someone who has suddenly made money or been linked to tenders at Eskom. This is someone who basically says, oh, I wasn't there. I'm not there. Don't ask me questions. And you know what? I am too important to be asked questions. But I think Zimbabwe this week is interesting for me because you see people who think that they are invincible, that they will survive forever, that they will not be caught, that history will not catch up with them. There's suddenly 37 years it's taken, but it's caught up with them. There's a story about that's been run in the past 2 days, and it's about an army guy in the Balkans. I think it's Bosnia Herzegovina. This Ratko Mladic, I think is his name.
Remember him.
Ratko Mladic was responsible for the killing and torture and starvation of thousands of people. Yesterday at the International Criminal Court, the day before, at the International Criminal Court, he was found guilty and he was sentenced. I can't remember what the exact sentence is. But this is for stuff that happened in the
90s.
Stuff that the world at first turned its eyes away from. These were people Mladic and his associates, these were people who were in power, who thought, you know what, I can just go in and clean up and just get rid of people. Watch this space. In Zimbabwe, people have been running around saying, oh, it's Freedom Day and so forth and so forth. But they'll start going back and remembering that in the 1980s, North Korea trained soldiers of the Zimbabwe Defense Force, went to Matabele land. They tortured people. They imposed curfews. They killed people. 20,000 people disappeared. And someone will start saying, I had a father or I had a mother who was raped, who was killed, who was this, and this happened. Mm-hmm. So it will catch up. It will catch up. So people like Lynn Brown have now been put at the heart and center of state capture in South Africa. It's not murder yet. It's not genocide. It's not, but it is essentially stealing from poor people. Remember that in this country, one third of people are living below the poverty line. Those people are the people. All that money that is being stolen from Eskom, from Denel, from Transnet, from all these state-owned enterprises, these are people who are poor because we're not taking that money and building them a school, a house, putting them on some kind of social grant. And one day, people will say, well, how did it happen? And someone will say, it was because Lynn Brown, a minister, mm-hmm. who is now 68 or 72 or 80, did this and on her watch gave Eskom to the Gupta family. And that will turn, and she will find herself in court and being asked questions where the danger is that she'll go to jail. I'm telling you now, it might take 10 years, it might take 20 years, but it's coming. And and Lynn Brown seemed to forget that. If you listen to her testimony and her answers to the evidence leader, Dutuzi Vanara, I think is his name, the advocate, she was obstructionist, as he alleged. She wanted to say, you know what? How dare you ask me questions? She was not interested in the truth or getting the bad guys. And for me, that tells you...
She is the bad guy.
Exactly. So it tells you what kind of people we're dealing with here. People who are not interested at all in what South Africa should be and what it should look like in 10 years' time. They just want to loot.
And Dudu Mieni's involvement, not only at SAA, which was bad enough, but now it seems that she's also an enabler in a number of other places.
Well, I mean, I thought that was that just was very beautiful. Revealing. That was just sweet. And I, you know, Zola Tsotsi has got some flack from me, from others, you, a lot of people in the past. But I want to thank him right now for that little tidbit of nice information. Can you imagine? I mean, there's Dudu Mieni. And there's her son, Talent. It's so beautiful. It's just too beautiful. But, you know, people who think that they're in power, that they can do these things. This is what Grace Mugabe did in Zimbabwe. That, you know, I can do this because Ubaba is mm-hmm. backing me. Well, what happens when Ubaba gets out of power? What happens when Ubaba is no longer the man in charge? Mm-hmm. You know, and then people start saying, actually, you remember when you made me do 1, 2, 3. These people, you know, Suzanne Daniels and Kulani Koma and Zola Tsotsi now, they're just the first. There are many, many others who will remember what was done to them. Dudu Mieni has issues at SAA. Has issues at what is the water board that she's chair of, I think Umkladuzi. All that stuff, you'll remember one of the CEOs from the water boards that she oversaw as chair was reported to have said he got fired because she told him, all my CEOs give me a little something, but you'd never give me anything. And And when you start putting those together, there's some young kid who wants to be a top cop out there. And one day that young kid will be sitting there connecting the dots. And this stuff will come out, and it will come out big time.
Let's just focus quickly on something that we do every week. The branches, the campaign, December conference is only a few days away now. So things are getting tight. I heard from a reasonably good source that Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma had to be talked out of dropping out of the campaign a week ago. Did you hear that as well?
Yeah, I heard that. And you know, the Mail and Guardian also sort of scratched at the story, but they didn't have enough meat on it. But a lot of that is coming out now, that there's a realization that, the branches are not doing the right thing. We've spoken a lot on the show about the Mpumalanga Premier, David Mabuza. You'll remember one of Mabale's favorite people was in Mhlanga in Mpumalanga last week. That's Bathabile Dlamini, the president of the ANC Women's League. And she held rallies on Friday in Mhlanga and on Saturday in Mpumalanga. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma was addressing those rallies. They were sort of the big Mpumalanga Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma rallies. David Mabuza didn't pitch up at those rallies. David Mabuza is crucial to this race because he has sway with many branches. If he says we're going with Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma now as our candidate, it would be a big boost for her. He didn't come out. He didn't show his face. He didn't say anything. The Cyril Ramaphosa people. Now, guys will remember what happened with those branches. Mpumalanga had 400 and whatever members at the Mangaung conference. 400 and something branches. Its membership, many people might want to ask questions, but its membership like blew up and went to the second biggest province of the ANC now, to 736, I think it is, delegates to the conference. That means that after KwaZulu-Natal, the people to get are in...
And it's also the one province where the ANC has maintained its 70%+
yes
majority.
So it's quite a united block in many ways. Now, the Cyril Ramaphosa people were also in Mpumalanga on Saturday. He didn't come out for them, but they have been running around South Africa now quite buoyant. They are saying, look, we've got 352 out of the 736 branches in Mpumalanga. That is nearly 50% of the Mpumalanga branches. Now, a year ago, we were talking about the Premier League and how it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to win. We are all together and so forth. Key to the Premier League is winning all your branch delegates and all of them going one way. If 50% of Mpumalanga, nearly 50%, 352 branches are pro Cyril Ramaphosa. These are unofficial figures, so we don't know for sure.
And David Mabuza didn't pitch at Nkosazana's rally. We're putting two and two together.
Yeah.
It's not looking good for her campaign.
So we had a conversation about 8 weeks ago in which we said it's not looking good for Nkosazana because her campaign is basically now run by the Northwest province. And that's our good man Supra. It's Bathabile Dlamini of the ANC Women's League and Colin Maine of the ANC Youth League. And we laughed a lot about the fact that would you believe that you're becoming president of the ANC if your campaign is now down to Supra, Colin Maine, and Bathabile Dlamini?
Sounds like the worst ever Avengers movie.
Someone's been watching too much movies. but that's where we are. So the South African Institute of Race Relations issued some...
I mean, Avengers. Really, Ben, we're trying to have an adult discussion here.
Any conversation with Oros in it is not adult.
Oros. Shame. Anyway. Where's Oros campaigning?
He's around. I mean, he's getting the youth in there, you know. But he's been going quieter and quieter and quieter as it becomes clear that maybe he's not the right person to have as your main campaigner. Basically, just think of it. So you mentioned Supra Mahuma Pelo Batabile Dlamini, Oros Maine, and number four in that is Carl Niehaus. It's dire.
Really, I mean, when you have to drag Carl Niehaus out of the woodwork, I mean, really.
It's pretty bad.
It's anyway, awful. So tell me, just in terms of, how does this make the president feel? Because this was his get-out-of-jail-free card. This is what he's been banking on. He's been plotting behind the scenes to try and make it as easy a road as possible for Nkosi Sana. Now, if she looks at this, let's imagine, because there could be a bunch of things going in her head, so it's pure speculation on our part. I said earlier this morning, maybe she is an honorable woman. Let's take her at her word. We have very little evidence to show that she's unscrupulous and corrupt and rotten and all of that stuff. There's only a little bit of evidence, this Mazzotti thing. And you know, kind of, when she was a minister, she tried her best to be a good minister. And that's according to her own PR, but again, let's take it at face value. What if she is a good person and she's looking at this rotten kettle of fish she's supposed to inherit and she's thinking, I don't want a piece of this. This is not what I got into the business of politics for. Maybe that's why she hit a wobble over the weekend.
Maybe that's it. Also, it's the prospect of loss, the prospect of, wow, I tried to be deputy president with Thabo Mbeki, by the way, in 2007, and we lost, humiliatingly 60% to 40%. I'm going for the big prize now, and it's not looking good. We're not going to win. So whatever it is that I might stand for as Nkosi Sana Dlamini Zuma, it's never going to happen. Do I want another humiliating loss? Do I want to see the ANC going through that again? So that's the first thing. But to your question about the president, the man must be desperate right now. We've just seen an example of a party, and I'm not saying it's the best thing to happen, but you've seen an example of a party where the number two has managed to get the number one out, and that's in Zimbabwe, where Emmerson Mnangagwa conspired basically with the army to say, this guy is bad business and let's get him out. Jacob Zuma is now facing the real prospect of a loss of power in the ANC. The ANC, remember, we are a party system here, and that means that Mabale, Siya, Ben, they voted for the ANC while you and I voted for the EFF. But you vote for a party. You and I didn't vote for Julius Malema. They didn't vote for Jacob Zuma. They voted for the EFF or the ANC or the DA or, you know, ACDP, whoever one chooses to vote for. Do you remember the ACDP, Sia? Don't forget
that's
the
his
ACDP.
Party.
Maybe
about?
We should have a show on just the ACDP.
Reverend Kenneth Meshwe.
All 45 minutes of it. Fire and brimstone. Amen.
Shame.
Anyway, so what I'm saying here. What I'm saying here is that Jacob Zuma, in 3 weeks, will not be the leader of the ANC. Definitely will not be. Two, he faces the prospect of someone who says, we will deal with corruption. We will deal with Lynn Brown. We will deal with the issues raised by Zola Tsotsi in a systematic manner, in a criminal manner. That is, the police will investigate this stuff and someone will go to court. And that could be Cyril Ramaphosa. So Jacob Zuma is now facing the prospect of 783 counts of fraud, corruption, and racketeering coming back. He's facing the prospect of all sorts of investigations of state capture and so forth and so forth coming at him. Jacob Zuma is desperate, and Jacob Zuma has a history of brutality, a history of saying, you used to be with me, you're no longer with me, you're out. So Julius Malema, out. Bladin Zimande, out. Zwelin Zimavavi, out. And so what will he do now? I think these are desperate days for Jacob Zuma. Jacob Zuma is seeing power seep away from him. The loss, the setbacks that Nkosi Sana Dlamini Zuma is going through mean that Jacob Zuma is now calculating and saying, how do I keep my hold on power so that I don't go to jail? And that means that Jacob Zuma is the greatest danger that the ANC faces in the run-up to the conference in December. Why? Because he may then try to make sure that that conference collapses and that extends his hold on power for however long. The ANC constitution is silent on what happens if there's a loss of if the conference collapses. But we know this. The ANC will have to keep going with the leadership that it has. And that is Jacob Zuma's last card if it's clear that he's going to lose.
Now, would he collapse the conference or would he try to rig the votes?
Both are in play. So think about what's happened in KwaZulu-Natal. We now know that in KwaZulu-Natal, out of 876 delegates who will go to conference, out of about 800, 700 and something branches, 100 branches have lodged complaints saying, we wanted to vote for Cyril Ramaphosa to be the presidential nomination, and the provincial leaders came and collapsed our conference, didn't bring the material to make sure that it's free and fair, and so forth and so forth. Mm. That's 100 delegates who want to vote, 100 branches who want to vote for Cyril Ramaphosa. So the election is being rigged in KwaZulu-Natal. If you have 800 branches and 100 of them are saying, this is not good, that's an attempt to rig the election. Say what you will, but that's an attempt. So Gwede Mantashe has sent NEC members, leaders of the ANC, to try and resolve some of these problems. But I think that's the first thing. I think essentially the ANC in KwaZulu-Natal, in cahoots with Jacob Zuma, are trying to win it for Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. But it's not working, because at the moment we're talking about everyone has their own numbers, but some people are saying more than 200 ANC branches have already said they want Cyril Ramaphosa in KwaZulu-Natal. If that is the case, the landslide that Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma was expecting, was talking about, that Sihle Zikalala was talking about, is no longer present. It means that Cyril Ramaphosa has eaten a big chunk of Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma's pie, and that means it's trouble for her. Because
does it mean if the conference does go ahead, and let's say Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma wins, would it split the ANC?
I think it will definitely split the ANC. I think that if you think about Mondli Gungubele in Parliament yesterday, you think about Makosi Khoza's departure already. What would Cyril Ramaphosa in good conscience be doing in an ANC where it's clear that an election has been stolen? So what you'll have will be a battle over what is the ANC and which one is the real ANC. So a bit of the reprise of 2008-2009 when Cope said, we are going to call ourselves Congress of the People, because that's how, that was where the ANC was formed. And they were saying, we are the real ANC. Those are the thieving ANC. Thabo Mbeki last weekend spoke about exactly this, that is not the ANC.
Suddenly he's very vocal.
He's very vocal. He's been very vocal. Let's not go back to Zimbabwe right now. But anyway, he's been very vocal. But the point is, he spoke about these two ANCs, one that is the values of the ANC, one that is, no, we are the ANC because we had the conference and we have the T-shirts and so forth.
If Cyril wins, would there be a split in the ANC?
Well, if you think about it, if you are, let's take Lynn Brown. You've been a member of the ANC, you've been a member of the UDF and so forth and so forth. If you say, no, we are splitting from the ANC, what do you have outside of the ANC? The reason why you can loot, you can do things, is because you're in the ANC. So the corrupt grouping in the ANC now has more to lose by walking out of the ANC. Because, look, you know, if Cliff Central is looking for a chairman of the board, and you have a choice between Pravin Gordhan and Lynn Brown, a choice between Makosi Khoza and Mcebisi, well, let's say a choice between Bongani Bongo and Mcebisi Jonas. Bongani Bongo, a guy who's become a minister despite allegations of
fraud
and theft and all sorts in Mpumalanga, a guy who offered Advocate Vanara, an advocate for parliament, a bribe. You see, so the corrupt guys in the ANC, if they walk out of the ANC right now,
they have nothing.
They have nothing because civil society, business, no one wants to touch them. It's don't bring. Who is going to hire Lynn Brown after what we saw yesterday? After what we heard over the past 2 weeks about her complicity?
So she'll be jobless and homeless and out on the street, and possibly even up for prosecution.
Exactly. So she has to stay in the ANC because that's the only thing she's got left now.
So can we project it forward a little bit more? And I don't want to stretch either your patience or imagination on this, because we don't know. There's so much that could change.
Yeah.
But again, purely speculative. If Cyril does win and the ANC remains intact, let's say one or two dissidents, you know, they decide to go off and maybe go into private enterprise or, you know, full-time stealing or whatever. Let's say the ANC mostly stays intact. Would Cyril have a mandate based on winning this to clean house?
He'll have a mandate to clean house, but Cyril, whoever wins...
Because Cyril's been part and parcel of the last few years of state capture and downgrades and everything else that's happened. His hands are not clean.
His hands are not clean. He's partly responsible for all of it. Remember that he became deputy president to Jacob Zuma in December 2012. Mm-hmm. Within a year and a half, in 2014, he became deputy president of the country.
And he was the cleanup man.
He was supposed to be the cleanup man.
Well, he turned out to be a cleanup man for the president. Exactly. He defended him publicly. Exactly. He stood up and said, there's no state capture. You know, up to very recently, up to maybe a few months ago when it became clear that he was contesting the election for president, suddenly he found his conscience and suddenly he was the good guy.
And there's your answer to that question. The answer is Cyril Ramaphosa will clean up and try to make an example of a few people. But in large measure, it will be comrades. The past is the past. Let's get together and let's turn the economy around and so forth and so forth. I don't think Cyril Ramaphosa will go after every single ANC leader, every bent individual. I think that he will, at the end of the day, he's a party man and he will protect many of those inside his party.
So
he will make
political
concessions.
In that case, let's hope for coalition governments in 2019. Because even a rotten ANC that's less rotten than the current one is still rotten, too rotten to rule.
But that's always been the answer, that if people think they will be in power forever or that they can stay in power...
Their behavior is what we've witnessed.
Their behavior will be that way. What will happen if Cyril Ramaphosa wins is that sentiment will turn to the positive. People will say, oh, yes, it's looking fantastic and so forth. But will not drive the ANC to say we will hold every single person accountable. And that is a problem because then it means the ANC knows it will win in 2019, and so it won't rush to clean up.
I mean, effectively, we are also watching this happen. We've got a little prediction of the future in places like Tshwane and Joburg and PE, because we can see that the EFF are able to step away from something and remove the power of the majority party, the DA. Mm. But similarly, there could be coalitions between the DA and ANC. However, they'll still hold each other accountable. So there's a balance of power that we can see. It's not always fantastic because there is gridlock a lot of the time. But it's certainly a lot more accountable a government than you would get if you have a party with a huge majority.
The whiff of loss of power is always important in politics. It could be coalitions, but it's also just knowing that, you know what, if I don't step up. Sia will step in and take over, and he'll do a brilliant, a better job than I'm doing, and people will love it and will say, yeah, great. Once he starts, but if I sit there and I think, oh, I won, and oh, I'm, you know, the ANC is 106 years old until Jesus comes, and so forth and so forth, then that's how atrocities happen. That's
we have a word for that. Hubris.
Hubris. That's the good. Yeah. That's a good word.
Justice,
you're like
thank
Robert
you.
Mugabe, you're using such big words. Aren't you going to talk
I am going to go. He's coming to stay with me. Where do you think he's going? I'm not telling everybody, but I've got a spare room at home, and him and Grace, they're moving in.
Right.
Bob will be staying at my house.
I'm
charging him a very small rent. I'll charge him whatever his kids were paying for that hotel room that they were staying in here in Sandton. That's all. And he said, that's a very good deal. I will spend most of my time sleeping anyway, so I am happy to accept. Got a nice bed for him with one of those fancy mattresses.
Very kind of you.
I think I'll pop in for tea this weekend.
Yeah, you can. I've always wanted to speak to that man. I think he's a little deranged now.
Yeah.
I think he's probably senile. I mean, that's what people are publicly saying in Zimbabwe. But when he was good, he was really, really good. You know, he built schools, he built hospitals. In the beginning of his reign, people were very hopeful. Reign. Do you hear how we're using monarchical terms with him? But he was. This is a guy who, for many people, represented hope, you know?
Yeah.
He's really, he's wasted such
shame,
moral, political, and historical capital by just staying too long.
Guys, I want all of us to remember, and maybe to do some digging, whoever is listening. There's a guy called Itai Dzamara. He was an activist. Mm-hmm. Itai Dzamara stood up and said, Robert Mugabe needs to step down. Robert Mugabe is responsible for human rights abuses. And
how
so
long
forth.
Ago was that?
This is about 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Itai Dzamara disappeared.
No.
Itai Dzamara, we still don't know where Itai Dzamara is today. His family is looking for him. They don't know where he is. Now, you know, Robert Mugabe and Emmerson Mnangagwa and Constantine Chiwenga and many others know where Itai Dzamara is or what happened to him. He was probably tortured and killed by the CIO or some other security wing of ZANU-PF and the Zimbabwean government. You know, I mean, these guys need to know that they can't get away with telling us about what they did in the 80s and 90s and I built schools and da, da.
No, I didn't mean to be an apologist.
I know you're not. No, of all the people I know, you're not an apologist. But these guys are getting away with murder. So I watched, what's his name? Emmerson Mnangagwa yesterday.
Crocodile.
The Crocodile Lacoste t-shirt. So the Crocodile goes back. He stands in front of the people of Zimbabwe. He says all sorts of, yeah, we'll do this and because of one man and da-da-da. He was there.
Mm-hmm.
That guy was there throughout the past 37 years. He was the state security minister in the 80s.
Right.
When absolute hell was going down.
He was their David Mahlobo.
He was their David Mahlobo. Exactly. He was. Absolutely was. So...
But Justice, can I also say at this point, because I know that you mean to say in this case, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but there's no real change.
No.
At a state level. It's the same cast. All they've done is shuffled the deck.
It's the same crew. You know, I want to weep, actually. I'm feeling very angry about it. That the people of Zimbabwe on Saturday, more than a million people go out. Yeah, on Tuesday evening, Mugabe resigns, and the streets and Hillbrow and all over the world, people are jubilant. And yes, Mugabe is one guy who was very bad and he's gone, and I'm grateful for that. But you know, I want a real conversation in Zimbabwe about democracy, about accountability, and about the fact that every single one. There are some pictures that are doing the rounds on Facebook. They're horrific pictures. They're pictures of Mnangagwa's son on his private jet yesterday saying, oh, just done some deals. She's flashing $100 bills, huge amount, saying, yeah, look at what I've done. I've just done a deal with some company. And these are, think about Chiwenga and the army. These are people who have taken over some of the diamond mines and so forth in Zimbabwe.
They're not heroes.
They're not heroes. These people are not heroes. And I think this is a false dawn. This is a false dawn, and we need to be very careful,
you know,
about what's going on in Zimbabwe.
Again, if you pay attention to the history of Zimbabwe and you're prepared to read back about Joshua Nkomo and the history of ZANU PF, I mean, there's a lot there that we're just not learning lessons.
You know, I was a kid in the 80s, and I remember hearing stories on the radio and reading in newspapers. Joshua Nkomo had to flee Zimbabwe. He dressed up as a woman. Now, Joshua Nkomo was quite
a big man.
A very big man. He had to force himself into it to get out of Zimbabwe. And so many people were dying and so forth that he did a deal with Mugabe that said, okay, I'll be part of your government if we stop the killings. And that's what he did. But, you know, some bad stuff has gone on in Zimbabwe. And all these heroes, these newfound heroes in Zimbabwe, I'm telling you.
Well, there was a great article in the Daily Maverick yesterday where the title of the article was, this is not a new dawn, this is not a new beginning, it's just the snake shedding its skin.
Ah, that's a good headline there.
In fact, Pumi Mashiro said the same thing before she'd seen the article. She said, this is just a snake shedding its skin.
Yeah.
It's a very good analogy.
It's a very good analogy. It's absolutely true.
All right. Thank you, Justice.
Absolute pleasure. Lovely.
Very good.
Once again to be here.
Always another sterling burning platform. You can catch it every Thursday here on cliffcentral.com. It's brought to you by Nando's. cliffcentral.com